You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Over the last 2 years, there have been lots of news reports about the dramatic rise in home foreclosures, but little about farm foreclosures. Joining me to explain why we don't hear as much about them is Michael Boljay, distinguished professor in the Department of Agricultural Economics and the Center for Food and Agricultural Business at Purdue University. I'm very pleased to welcome him to today's first underreported segment. Hello.
Well, I'm pleased to be with you.
Most home foreclosure trackers don't track counties that have a population of less than 10,000. Are farm foreclosure rates tracked more closely?
Actually, not really. We don't really have a good historical data sets on foreclosures on a kind of a real-time basis that are reported. We've always go back after the fact and try to figure out what happened, but this is not something that we have good, solid, quote, monthly, quarterly, or real-time numbers on.
Last spring and summer, there were a slew of reports about the rising rates of rural foreclosures. Do foreclosures tend to go in waves?
Well, the foreclosure on farm properties and farm ownership typically doesn't quite connect as much as we do with the economic circumstances in urban areas, obviously. And we do see most rural residences that are part of a business, and so it's more the question of what the financial condition of the business or industry is, since the farm house is typically also part of the farm more generally in the farm property.
But don't the same lenders who offer home mortgages also handle farm mortgages?
Well, we do have in rural areas many of the community banks, for example, that are both involved in rural areas in financing the housing market as well as the farming industry. But again, they would not be making housing mortgages on farming operations. They would be making loans to the entire farming operation and not separating the house out as a separate lendable item.
So we would not see the same kinds of lax standards that we saw with homes, the CDOs, the mortgage-backed securities, speculation, and the like?
That's absolutely the case, that we haven't seen the securitization issue in the farm mortgage market like we have in the housing market. We haven't seen the same level of non-documented loans made in that industry as well. Most of the loans in agriculture are tied to the farm real estate, the productive property. The house is part of the and the residence is part of that property, and so they would not have a separate loan on that. And the business loan is typically much more heavily documented than you would might have in the housing market. A business loan, whether it be to a farming operation or to a commercial non-farm business in a rural community.
So, are you saying that farmers are in pretty good shape these days?
Well, certainly, from the perspective of comparison to the housing market, the foreclosure rate, the default rate is at substantially lower levels.
Such as.
Well, we don't hear any significant uptick in terms of the amount of foreclosures, and so when you're talking about double-digit numbers and even high double-digit numbers for housing defaults or non-payments, we're talking about low single-digit numbers for agriculture generally. Again, it's just almost a completely different kind of market, and even for farm business loans, which is really what we're talking about, real estate associated with farm businesses, you would see that many of those are not really in are in what we would call a rework status, where we would try to figure out how to rework that loan so that it would be able to be serviced rather than in a foreclosure status.
Well, in the 1990s, news was filled with stories about farms being foreclosed, farmers being very angry. Has that all changed?
Yeah, well, they're just probably correct this a little bit. The main financial stress in the agricultural sector in recent times was actually in the 1980s, not in the 1990s. We did have a significant financial crisis for the agricultural sector in the mid-1980s. We saw significant declines in farmland values. To put it in the current context, we saw, in particularly for Midwestern farm property, we saw as much as a 50% decline in values. So even a faster and a harsher decline in land values for farmers during that period of time than we've seen even today in most of the housing markets, although Las Vegas and a couple of others are probably at that level. But that problem that we saw back then was resolved in the classic ways you would see financial stress resolved. We saw a fair amount of write-offs of farm loans on the part of lending institutions. We saw a number of farmers who sold their farm property and used the proceeds of that property to pay down on the debt. We also saw that prior to that time, some farmers had some financial assets because of the high interest rates of the early 1980s, and so they were able to use those financial assets, liquidating CDs and other types of assets, and use that to service their debt problems. So we resolved the financial stress of the 1980s, not without a lot of pain, bank failures in rural areas, farm credit system encountering some, which is the cooperative lender for the farm production sector and the agricultural sector, encountering some significant losses and stress during that period of time. Farmers and their lenders became more conservative as a function of that experience, and so have not rebuilt the debt load in the industry back to the levels it was back then. Just as a number, we had a 22% debt-to-asset ratio in the 1980s, the mid-1980s. The debt-to-asset ratio for the agricultural sector as a whole today is about 10% debt. So about 90% of farmers' business assets, in most cases for farmers, this would include their personal residence, because it's part of the overall farming operation, is supported with the equity base that these farmers have. The other 10% is financed with debt.
My guest is Michael Bolger, Distinguished Professor in the Department of Agricultural Economics and the Center for Food and Agricultural Business at Purdue University. He's talking to us in the first of today's two underreported segments. So did farm lenders learn from the 1980s, but not the rest of the banking industry?
Well, I think that if you've experienced it directly, you do have a tendency to learn more than if you read about it and experience indirectly. And certainly the housing market did not experience during the 1980s the same kinds of pressures, and so they didn't have the same experiential learning opportunity that we had in the sector, because we didn't have the same level of, in fact, I haven't monitored the housing market during that period of time, but I think it was still continued to be kind of in an uptick in the 1980s. And so in that sense, we did learn the lessons because we experienced it more directly. Bankers who were in the housing market at that time didn't have the same kinds of financial stress, even though we had a higher than historical rates of unemployment. It still wasn't showing up in terms of at the same level of defaults that we saw in more recently in the housing market. We didn't have as much of the non-documented loan activity during that period of time either that we saw in today's housing market. So we had a different institutional structure today in the housing market that really resulted in much higher leverage ratios and much more difficulty in terms of debt servicing than we had back in the 1980s in the housing market as well.
Well, wasn't the housing boom to some degree stimulated by the fact that a lot of farmland was bought up and turned into housing developments in the 80s and since?
Well, certainly the expansion in the housing market and the development of the housing market did result in conversion of farmland, but it was stimulated to a large degree by a combination of relatively low interest rates for housing loans. It was stimulated in part because we had a government policy that facilitated people moving into the housing market. We had policies because housing was perceived to be something that we wanted to facilitate and help people get their own single-family residential residence. So it was mainly a combination of market forces encouraging this and, to be very frank, government policy that said housing is something that we ought to make sure people have. Owning their own home is something we ought to make sure people have the opportunity to do. And then we basically did some things on the financial side that maybe did create a housing bubble that was not supportable, and part of that was again some of the Fed policy as well as some of the low interest rate environment of the last 5 to 7 years prior to the 2007-2008 crash.
Every time farm bills come up in Congress, there are people who complain about the inequities of farm subsidies. Have they played a role in stabilizing the situation, or are they creating, as some people have suggested, a system in which we have a lot of large corporate-owned farms that can make a lot of money, and then smaller farms that where people are just hanging on?
Well, there's a whole lot of issues associated with that question that we probably could spend days debating. But generally, the farm programs that we had of the last 20 years have provided an underlying safety net for the agricultural sector. That safety net, by the way, is not nearly at the same level that it once was because we've had a significant increase in commodity prices since in the last 2 or 3 years. And so the government support system has not been adjusted to kind of the new price level. There are arguments that would said that because you reduce the risk businessmen in any industry, when you reduce that risk and provide subsidies, that results in then those businesses being able to expand more aggressively than they would otherwise. I think that is true, and so we did see some farmers that were able to expand their business in part because of the risk reduction associated with the government's price support system, not so much as a function of the direct payments that they might have received.
There's also been a boost in certain crops like corn for ethanol.
Well, there's no doubt about the fact that we've seen increased incentives for farmers to produce crops like corn for other end uses rather than for the traditional nutrition market. That's been part of our government policy that has said we want to maintain energy independence or develop energy independence, and that renewable fuels are one source of energy independence. And so at the time, a decade or so when this conversation started initially, corn was probably the most attractive, quickest product to move into that end use. So ethanol was subsidized very heavily, both in terms of directly through tax incentives as well as grants, contracts, as well as government mandates, and that has resulted in higher prices for corn and other products because of that, and so there has been a direct impact of energy policy into rural communities in that way.
How important is where the farm is located? North, south, east, west, Midwest? Are they facing different issues?
Well, the location of the farm in terms of geography is not nearly as right now as critical as the kind of enterprise that farm is in. Back to the issue of financial stress, it is the case that the livestock sector is encountering, particularly the poultry, the pork, and the dairy sector, are encountering much more serious financial stress problems than, say, the grain sector. We've had
and why is that? Are people cutting down on eating meat?
Well, there's two fundamental reasons. One is that with the recession, we have had both a slowdown in the growth in demand for meat here in the U.S., but equally, if not more important, has been a decline in the exporting of animal proteins, which have been one of the fastest growing sources of agricultural exports in the past. So people in the rest of the world that have reduced incomes aren't buying as much of our pork or poultry or dairy products. But the second and equally important thing is that with the higher corn prices, in part because of government policy related to the ethanol industry, the feed cost associated with the livestock industries has significantly increased. And so livestock producers have faced in the last 18 to 24 months kind of the pinchers of a declining demand and rising cost structure.
My guest is Michael Boljay, Distinguished Professor in the Department of Agricultural Economics and the Center for Food and Agricultural Business at Purdue University. We will continue our conversation about farms and related matters on the first segment of our unreported series today, right after this. We're back with Michael Boljay, who's a distinguished professor in the Department of Agricultural Economics and the Center for Food and Agricultural Business at Purdue University. We're talking about the state of farms and farm foreclosures in today's underreported segment, the first of our underreported segments. A listener called in to say that dairy farms in New York State have been in real trouble. Is there something particular going on there, or are dairy farmers across the country having problems?
Well, dairy farmers across the country are having difficult times. And so, as we indicated in one of our earlier comments, one has to be very careful to not conclude, since we have don't have serious problems in the industry generally, that means that some parts of the industry, of the agricultural sector, are not encountering difficulty. The dairy industry is one of those sectors. They've had a combination of high feed costs combined with low milk prices that has put the dairy industry and dairy farmers specifically under some pretty severe financial stress, probably more financial stress than that industry specifically has faced maybe in the lifetime of many dairy farmers, to be very frank.
Why is that?
Well, again, the issue is that we saw milk prices go from say the high teens down to the very low teens in a relatively short period of time. So milk at the farm gate level went from say $18 a hundredweight down to $10, $11, and $12. In fact, in some cases, it even broke below $10. And when you put that type of almost unbelievable decline in prices, again, because of a combination of a recession and decreased exports because of the global nature of this economic recession, with the fact that their cost doubled in terms of feed costs, so they were maybe buying corn to feed to their animals at a price of say $2.50 a bushel, that went up to $4 or $4.50 a bushel. That just really was the classic double whammy that resulted in very, very large red ink for many dairy farmers.
Haven't economists predicted that we'll see a higher level of farm foreclosures this year? And the USDA projects that it will make about $1.3 billion more ad hoc and emergency assistance payments in 2010.
Yes, and so we do expect to see some increased financial stress in the industry, and there will be more foreclosures. But we need to kind of think about it again in the context that many of your audience are thinking. It's a very different order of magnitude than we see in the housing market. Will we see an increase in foreclosures? No doubt about it. But foreclosure rates are going to uptick maybe by one percentage point compared to, or maybe two at the outside, compared compared to what they might have been in the past, which is a very different kind of situation than we see in the housing market. Now, we do need to recognize that we will probably see more, as we've already suggested, financial stress and maybe foreclosures in the dairy industry and in the pork industry than we would, say, in the grain industry. But again, one has to at least think about it in that context, that it is going to be an increase, but doubling from 1% to 2% is very different than going from 10% to 20% in terms of the delinquency rate in the housing market, for example. Now, it is the case, and because of concerns about this, that the federal government is expanding its FSA loan programs, Farm Service Agency loan programs, additional funding available for agriculture as a means of helping commercial banks and the farm credit system to be able to bridge this period of financial stress. And so it is the case that there's going to be more funding available, but it is, again, a very different order of magnitude problem for agriculture than it is in the housing market.
Then there are environmental concerns that affect farmers no matter where they are. We've been hearing about frost affecting the citrus crop in Florida, water shortages and drought in California. How serious are weather-related issues? Can they threaten a farmer's entire operation?
There's no doubt that one of the uncertainties that farmers really struggle mightily with, and even more so in the last couple of years, is this issue of weather uncertainty. You mentioned those two events in the East and the West Coast. If you were to talk to a Midwestern farmer, he would complain about too much water, which is kind of the absolute opposite for compared to some other parts of the country. We had a very wet fall here in the Midwest, so there is still, surprising to many, a fair amount of corn that didn't get harvested this year that's now under stove banks in the northern part of Illinois and in parts of Iowa, Minnesota, et cetera. So the broader issue of weather uncertainty is a key issue that farmers face, and they have been encountering more weather events in recent times than we might have had in the past.
I want to thank you so much for talking with us today. Michael Bolje is Distinguished Professor in the Department of Agricultural Economics and the Center for Food and Agricultural Business at Purdue University.
It's been my pleasure.